left one yet.
Pizza, pizza.
That's how I got hired at Chippendales.
Big O Showtime!
When you were making it for young in the kitchen, I was in the dining room having sushi.
It's a limousine tech show, and that's a fact. If you don't like the gas, you got to get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that are looking bad. But the strong link go direct to DLFGS.org. And I see challenges at LinuxTech.net. Bound tech show. Just sit right there, go to Kessler, just about to begin.
Welcome to episode 955 of part 2 of TLLTS, the Linuxing Tech Show. This is supposed to be 956, but idiot forgot to press the record button last week on all three of my machines and didn't even notice it. To be fair, there was a lot going on last week. What you missed, my wife had to go in for surgery last week. More Dancy went in for surgery last week. Have you heard anything about his surgery?
I have to look. So far, no.
Okay. My wife went in for to fix a vertebrae. Between C5 and 6 collapsed, and that went off. It was Friday morning. That went really well. She actually came home that day, was doing very well, and then the medicine that they pumped her full of wore off a day and a half later, and she's been in a pretty good amount of pain. Today is supposed to be the start of, you know, starting tomorrow, it's supposed to be all downhill now, for not in the negative sense, but over the wall, down the hill, you know, getting better out of the pain. So she's doing well. She can't really do anything for another week and a half, so she's laid up. But Joel, yep. Can you just give a quick synopsis of what everybody missed last week when you talked about the Ohio
CorksCon?
Was that what it was called?
Central Ohio Retro Gaming Society.
Yes.
It's the quick I've synopsis. I've never been to a retro game conference before. So I found out that we have one locally here. And I found out it was going to happen in May, so I decided to go. It was bananas so far as how many people actually came to this location, which was essentially a gym. You know, it's in a bunch of tables set up in there. Got to talk with John Riggs, YouTuber, from his own channel, as well as Metal Jesus Rocks. That's another channel he's appeared on. And there was a guy from... I'm forgetting the other guy. But cool guys in the question and answer. And I will be going to another one again. It was a lot of fun. I picked up the Return of the Jedi Death Star battle game for my Atari 800XL, which had very many ports. I think the Commodore 64 and the Atari had it too. But I think I'm going to be going back. I think I'm going to try and make a trip out to... There's another virtual... like a retro computing fair. There's one on the East Coast, and one in the Midwest. So I'm probably going to try and go to at least one of those maybe next year. So, this one was mostly, well, really anything. So anything that could play games, including the old 8-bit computers. You know, there was a TI-99A there, which, probably made Dan happy to see. It was in good shape too, actually, when I looked at it closer. But Again, I didn't have a lot of money because I'm trying to save up for the Southeast Linux Fest, which is in not this weekend, not next weekend, but the weekend after that, 2 weeks.
All right.
So, by the way, I did, and I'll mention this about Moore Dancy. Moore Dancy, otherwise known as Robert Neal, who was the former producer of TLLTS t-shirts, which, you know, surprisingly enough, I don't have any of those anymore.
I do.
Mine all just wore out. underwent surgery for stage 3 cancer. I did kind of read through. He hasn't posted anything since the surgery. But a couple people had asked, how things are going in that particular post. And he's home, but he's has a lot of pain right now. So if y'all who listen, pray, go ahead and pray for the man, and hopefully he's doing much better now.
Yes, absolutely, hopefully. He's a really good guy, and we wish him the best. Hopefully, we'll hear from him again soon. The big contribution I had last week was talking about my forays into soda making, from kombucha to ginger bug to playing around with yeast fermentation, yeast for carbonation. Ultimately, in a nutshell, going from garbage water to something I think tastes pretty good. What I settled on and found that really works for me, and I did another round of it again this week, and it turned out pretty well, was my process boils down to a gallon jar that I've used in the past for kombucha or other things like that, or you can make sun tea, like, and just a gallon jar. And you could do this in 2 liter soda bottles too, but I don't like trying to clean a plastic soda bottle or whatever. But one of the things one of the things that they do say that makes it easier if you use a plastic bottle is you can tell the carbonation a lot better because the bottle will get hard, really hard. Right. And they warn about using, like, the bottles I use are standard glass bottles with a stopper at the top that you clip down, and it forms, it's got like a little rubber stopper, and it forms an airtight seal. They caution about doing that because the carbonation, you have to be very careful. It could happen really fast and cause the bottles to explode. I've never had that problem, but I'm kind of know from experience what to expect from the carbonation, and in a ballpark how quick it'll probably happen and things to look for on that. And if you do it enough times, you'll be able to judge pretty much where it's at in its life cycle to avoid stuff like that happening. But there's always that risk. But anyway, what I've been doing is I've done half batches instead of a half. It's just a half a gallon I've been doing instead of the full gallon. So it's been a half a gallon of water, a cup of sugar, and then a quarter teaspoon of champagne yeast is what I've been using this time around, and it works out pretty well. So mix that up, let it sit for a day, and then I pour it into the bottles, and then I let it sit for, what I'm finding is like 3 days. After 3 days, it's got the first, like, it's carbonated and you can drink it, you can use it, but I find it better if I let it sit at least 4 days, seems to be the magic number. Like, that's when it starts to get really good. And then for another couple of days after that, it's It's pretty good. And then what I do is I have extracts that I've bought online. I've tried blueberry, apple, orange, cola, lime. I also have birch beer and root beer that I've done in the past. And generally it's, again, for the fruitier ones, I have found a quarter of a teaspoon, an eighth to a quarter of a teaspoon of citric acid. And that comes in granules. And then a quarter teaspoon of the extract. And a mix, you know, then I pour, like, I pour the carbonated water into it and mix it. And then I let it sit. I found that if I let it sit for a few minutes, when you first pop open that bottle, you're going to have a little bit of a yeasty almost a methane-y, like a fart, right? That's where the garbage water comes from, right? It's not really that bad, but it's just that process, right? So if you let it air out, it mellows out, and you know, you almost don't notice it anymore after that. But if you just, you know, dive right into it and drink it right from the get-go, you get some hints of that, some notes of that fermented yeast byproduct, but letting it sit for like a minute or so and that kind of goes away. I did the cola with and without. I think I said, that's when I forgot, I have a cola extract too. I did the cola extract with and without citric acid. I like it without the citric acid better. I find that the citric acid kind of overpowers and changes like that cola flavor. And I wasn't too keen on it. So next, I've done both. I prefer it without the citric acid. Same with birch beer and root beer. I don't think I would put the citric acid. I didn't do it before, and I don't think I'm going to try it with the citric acid in there for the fruitier drinks. Yes. And then I put food coloring in it because otherwise it's going to be from a kind of a almost opaque cloud. It's like a cloudy white to a almost clear color that you'll get out of it doing it this way. So I do add a little food coloring in there, obviously. You know, if it's an orange soda, it's going to be orange. If it's apple, I try to get a little red, or maybe I'll do green. Lime, green, you know, stuff like that. So it's been fun. The only downside is you got to clean the bottles and sanitize everything. It's always good to have decent sanitation. Otherwise, you get strains of bacteria or yeast in there, and it'll really not good. And you can make yourself sick. I have never had that happen, but I've had, like when I was doing kombucha, I got some Brett in there, and that really turned. And I know how it got in there too. And it wasn't from the sanitation so much as I think when I was making the kombucha with cherries at that time, I think that one of the cherries probably had that bacteria or had it in it or on it. And maybe it was the sanitation didn't wash it good enough, but it's still possible that could have happened. Even if I did wash it, it could have just had that in there and I didn't notice it.
And this goes way beyond the SodaStream, which is essentially carbonating water with a carbonator and putting some syrup in, which, hey, it's good. I have used mine for a while until my big thing was the syrups I was using changed formulation. Like they have a Dr. Pepper knockoff called Dr. Pete in both a regular and a diet version. And somehow they changed the formulation so it tasted more like maple syrup, which is just... No, I mean, I like maple syrup on my pancakes. I like maple syrup on my waffles. Not so much in a soda bottle. At that point, it stopped drinking it. So it's like,
and that's the thing. I mean, if you want to get it closer to like what you used to, fountain soda or canned soda, you know, the Soda Stream is the way to go, or buying club soda, or whatever, carbonated water and mixing extracts into it. That's going to get you there faster and closer. I wanted to do it without having to rely on like buying carbonated water. See it that way, how close it will taste. So in what I'm doing, you're always going to have that yeast flavoring in there, and the different, depending on the type of yeast, it can go anywhere from, you know, very mild to strong. If you don't use like yeast you buy in a store for making bread, that's terrible. Unless you really want to have your soda taste like
bread,
you know, soda with a side of with a loaf of bread on it, you know, if that's what you like, you know, more power to you. But
it's a little bit bready.
Yeah, that's not the way to go. But anyway, that's good. That's a catch up from last week, and Joel, you said you installed Manjaro this week.
Yeah, today. Again, I had tried a couple weeks ago. I tried the KDE Plasma version of Manjaro. I mean, granted, yeah, I could have installed GNOME on it, but I went back to Ubuntu, specifically Zubuntu, last week, and then this week I thought, let's try Manjaro again, because I really liked it. But for some reason, KDE just wasn't playing well with Mumble. But I got to work better, much better, today on using GNOME. Gosh, it's so easy to set up. The three apps I depend on every week for the show is Chrome, XChat, or Conversation, either or, for IRC. By the way, it looks like LinuxLink.net is not up. You probably never brought it up after your power outage. So the IRC server's down.
No, it's up.
The LinuxLink.net, right?
Yeah. And the IRC server's up because I'm on it.
Yeah, my hex chat is trying to connect to it. It says 170.169.159.60. The LinuxLink.net.
170.169.159.60. And it's port.
Oh, it might be. I have the wrong port. That's a possibility. 6697.
Hold on, I got to bring up my server list. I don't remember. It's been a while since.
Because that's the default one. Anywho, while you're looking at that, so Mumble and Hexchat were both installable right out of Pac-Man, with the Pac-Man, sudo Pac-Man-S, capital S, that is, and then Mumble for Mumble, and then Hexchat for Hexchat, which is similar to the old Xchat. Those installed just fine. For Chrome, all I had to do was, I'm off of port. Okay. But for Chrome, I had to install Git and download Yay, the Y-A-Y, and then basically issued the same command, but using Yay instead of Pac-Man, and it downloaded and built the Chrome package for Arch, which is what Manjaro is based on. So, but other than that, I'm liking it really well. They have some unique things in Arch, like the Mumble version would work with think your son sounds over called Pipes now. It also works set up to work with Jack as well. So far as polish, I don't think you're gonna find a distro that has as much polish. I mean, the only other one that's close and polish level wise, I think I'd like to say is Ubuntu. The tweaks they've made for the terminal has the whatever plugin that you need in the terminal to basically it adds a Git stuff to it, so that just by looking at the prompt, I can see which branch I'm in and mess around with that. And it's just pretty overall, really, really nice. I'm liking it.
So Git, yay, right? That is right. That's a wraparound Pac-Man. Does inclusive of AUR, and it'll do both, right? Can you replace Pac-Man with YAY altogether?
No. I think that's for the stuff that's not in the repos.
It's in AUR, right?
I think so.
Yeah, I have Yay installed. YAY. I'm trying to remember if you. I thought it would allow you to. Yeah, you can. It's a wrapper around Pac-Man. You could use it in place of Pac-Man. Like I could do YAY-SYU, which I would do Pac-Man-SYU for when I do updates and stuff. So yeah, you use it, but it does AUR also. But yeah. So how long did it take you to get Google Chrome installed?
Minutes. I mean it just worked.
Oh, you know what? That's right. It's not compiling Google Chrome. It extracts it from, I think, Google,
probably the Deb.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember what Google
has both Debs and RPMs.
I thought they also had a binary.
That's a good question. I can
find out. I can just go to why am I having a hard time finding this? I'm on my Arch machine, and I can't remember what I have to use to.
There we go. I finally fixed my RC. There was two annoying things with HexChat and the Manjaro defaults. One of them was it used port 6697 by default, so I didn't change the port. So once I changed the port, that fixed that part of it. But the other thing too, it also had used SSL checked by default as well when I added a new IRC network. Once I removed that stuff, it was fine. Not that there's anybody in IRC. You're there, Dan, not even Dave Yates. He's in there.
Sometimes. He's not always there. All right, yeah, sorry. I don't think I have Google Chrome installed here, but I have Firefox.
No. Yeah, because that's actually important too, because this is also something I've seen on Ubuntu. Chromium won't let you sync with your Google account anymore. So if you want to have I think you can still log into Gmail, but it won't sync things like your bookmarks and stuff unless you're using Chrome.
Yeah, you're right. They do provide a Debian package and an RPM.
Community does it.
Yeah, community source. So the one for Arch, which would be, you're running Manjaro, right? would be the one that Arch uses from the Arch AUR.
Yep.
A repository.
Yep.
Oh, wait, ArchLinux.org packages extra XE. Well, there is a package one in there. But that's Chromium.
Yep.
So I don't think that's the one you want. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. They probably extracted the Debian, the Deb package, and
that's what I'm assuming. Yeah, rebuild it into an Arch package, yeah. But anywho, so I'm going to, because Southeast Linux West Fest is in 2 weeks. The call for papers is now closed. I don't think he has the full schedule yet, but they added some talks I don't remember if I mentioned them last week, but let's go through some of the additional early talk approvals. Charlie Lee doing a presentation on running your favorite Linux distribution on the free BSD Linux emulator. Well, that's interesting. Zach Underwood's doing automating a Linux fest. And that's apparently talking about how they do it with for Southeast Linux Fest. Make Ansible. Ooh, this is one I'm going to make Ansible suck less by Jeff Probst. I definitely want to see that one. Perry Gagne does a Linux network performance monitoring with LNST. Rob Beatty modernizing a legacy PHP stack application for a serverless container-based world. Aaron Honeycutt's doing pushing open hardware into space. Mark Ulmer's doing, did you bring a Windows laptop to a Linux conference? Well, I'm going to have my Surface with me, and it's going to have Windows on it, but I will have a Linux laptop too. Anywho, says this is a session for beginners. We understand full immersion in Linux is not always possible. Windows happens and is sometimes required. Presented here with some options to interact with Linux from Windows. Looks like he's talking about Windows services for Linux too, which is cool. Bruce Mumjian talking about mastering Postgres SQL administration. He's also doing one on securing Postgres from external attack. There's one that says why 10% of women in the conference program does not mean gender quotas. Not necessarily one I go to, but there's that. Database observability and troubleshooting, finding and fixing application bottlenecks with open source tools by Matt Yankovic. Alexander Rubin's doing pen testing open source databases, MySQL and Postgres. And Luke Smith's doing private and sound global currency with free software. Gee, that sounds like Bitcoin. And Ian Brun, I don't know how to say his last name, but how to start a 3D printing addiction. I don't need to know how to start. I already have it. some of the other early ones, I'm not going to go through all the rest of them. You can go to the Southeast Linux Fest website. But particular ones of interest to me are ones by Daryl Little, who's doing some amateur radio oriented ones on SDR, and the only Alan Hicks will be doing a presentation on why IPv6 will never be adopted. So and Eric Raymond's going to be there again.
I would be interested to see that, why it won't be adopted. I mean, I know they've been talking about it for what, a decade at least now.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm not surprised that it won't be adopted.
I think most of our AWS instances all have IPv6 addresses as well, but they also have IPv4, and all our comms usually happens over IPv4 right now, and that's over, you know, like I did a count. We use somebody wrote a tool that we call Palantir, which basically does like a audit of versions and stuff, and plops it into a database that you can then query with AWS Athena with SQL. So today I was fiddling with that because we may have to do some impromptu updates or server builds, I should say, to get some parts of our infrastructure off of Windows Server 2012 and onto something more supported. Because you got about a little under a year to get off of Windows 2012 R2 and until Microsoft no longer supports it. So, and that's going to start now. But I had to do some querying with this Palantir tool with Athena. And that's really neat because I was able to specify I'm looking for Windows servers, I'm looking for them running a colleague ERP, and I'm looking for Windows Server 2012, any version, I don't care whether it's data center or enterprise, doesn't matter. And I was able to get that list and found out like we have over 400 servers that we eventually need to get off of Windows Server 2012. But that goes towards part of the automation. You're just making it, automation is the way, and automation on a scale that is completely unlike what we've done in the past with Cron and other things. Dan knows what I'm talking about. Automated builds, automated updates, things like that. So I've been doing quite a bit of work on that, trying to learn how to do that. Hence me installing Git on my Manjaro laptop here. And of all things, Microsoft Code. Or VS Code, or whatever you want to call it, which is a really, really great editor, and with lots of cool plugins and stuff. So, and even that, I was able to get installed on Manjaro.
Wait, what did you say there? The last thing?
Microsoft VS Code.
Oh, on Manjaro. Do you like VS Code?
Yeah, I mean it's a really a full kind of like an almost like an IDE. Like you install plugins for I install plugins for Python. Actually, I probably should go ahead and throw the Ansible plugins in there too for YAML. But it'll do all that the syntax highlighting and things like that, and then like I was toying around, I wrote a little Python program that can calculate antenna lengths of a dipole based on the well-established mathematical formulas. Nothing fancy, just all terminal, and then you're right inside VS Code. You can just hit the run button and run the Python code. I mean, and then it also has Git plugins within it. You can basically do your commits right from VS Code. It's pretty snazzy. And that's kind of where it's like,
whoa.
As my work life goes on, I'm going to be doing more of this kind of GitOps stuff. But I'm also kind of uncomfortable with making a mistake in our repo, even though I know it's going to get PRs and approvals and stuff like that. Most of our code before we can merge it had to have at least two approvals.
You know what I say to that, Joel? I say, what? Get used to it, man. Because I make mistakes all the time. And even,
of course.
I make mistakes all the time. They get pushed in production sometimes. And I'm like, who the hell did that? Oh, that was me. Who approved that? Why didn't you stop me? why didn't you catch that on that?
My teammate had that all the time. Too. Yeah, my teammate just had that happen where he's writing a script that's part of one of the things we're trying to do is we're trying to automate the clone process, which normally you basically make a copy of the app home, basically the main application folder we call app home. And if it's a Linux system, that's all you need. But if it's a Windows system, you need that and a SQL restore. So, and then once you get those things in place after you deleted the old environment, you run the wizard, which is in a graphical Java application. Well, they've now created a headless SAVLA, which that's the name of the application that we call it, so that where you can just issue command line commands to do it. So we're gonna start doing some of our clones automated. They won't be scheduled automated, you know. So we still have to execute the command, and it's done via a plugin that we basically wrote, a Slack bot, where you just issue commands from this into the Slack bot, and it does its thing. So, which I think in the end run, it's using also internally written tool called Zap, and we're migrating that to Zapcd for more continuous deployment and continuous integration. So, a lot of internal stuff that we're starting to use.
Nothing
standard.
You know, one of the things that I don't want to say I have a problem with, but I could just never truly like adapt to, is using something like Microsoft Visual Code, right? Because I've tried that, I've tried Atom, and I've tried WebStorm, and that horrendous piece of garbage that Manfry will hate me for saying this, Eclipse.
Yeah.
Not that Eclipse is a horrendous piece, like it is. Eclipse is a monster. Well, right? it's like the monster of all of them. And like I always find myself back to using VI. And just a command line. That's what I use all the time. I use that all the time.
I think the thing I like about VS Code is the syntax highlighting, which helps you from making stupid mistakes in syntax.
I do see that. Like the more there's the other side of that thing too, is when I like, to me, an editor should be simple, and it allows me to do what I want to do as like a text editor. Now, granted, I will say the first time, you know, the first couple of steps with Vim are anything VI or anything but easy at first, right? Everything has a learning curve, and I get that. I just haven't committed to the learning curve too deeply of a lot of those other tools. Because yeah, you're right. When you have all that set up, and you have the syntax highlighting and a bit of the like the language code completion and understanding. I mean, I you could click on a class and it'll show you where else in your project that class is, you know, where it's being used, that library is being used, and all those different things in there. I mean, there's so much integration and depth and stuff that I never take advantage of because I'm an idiot.
You're grumpy old man.
Yeah. But no,
everyone should never need is VI, and we like it.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong, I like VI, but
the thing that I always end up doing is whenever I get one of those, start using one of those editors, of course I have to enable like the VI command set in there. So to be able to control it like you would with the keystrokes in VI. And invariably, there's like something that just doesn't work the way I would expect it to. And it always throws me off.
And there's editors, like I've messed around with Bluefish. Bluefish has some of that, but I don't think it has the Git integration, which is going to be so critical. And it's not that I don't know how to deal with the Git command line. I do. It's just the one nice thing of I think you can set up VS Code so we'll do a commit every once in a while to the branch you're working in. So that way you don't lose your code. Because, you know, with Git, you have literally have a copy on your workstation. So, you know, it's important to do a commit every once in a while, even if you're not completely done with it, so that you don't lose your work, you know. And to also grab work that other folks have been working on at the same time, if you're working on this in the same branch, you know. But
you know, that's another thing that I really need to buckle down more on. So I've been using Git for years, but
right,
like if I screw up and instead of committing code to a branch, commit it directly to the main branch, which I've done in the past, and then I have to back out of that, like I have to go look that up. I don't have that committed to memory because I never do that. Like it's once a year or twice a year I do that, and then I'm like, oh shit, now I gotta remember how to, you know, back that out, and like all those, like just the basic stuff I could do, like every day I do. But once you start getting them like intermediate and more, what I would consider probably more intermediate, maybe some people would say it's probably more advanced or whatever, it's just like I have to look that up because I don't do it on a daily basis and I don't remember how to do it. You know what I mean? But yeah, Git better than SVN though. I give it that.
Yeah. What we're doing, a lot of what we're doing, like I said, a lot of YAML because we use a lot of Ansible, and Python, and PowerShell because we do have Windows servers. So. And yeah, I will say PowerShell is definitely not my favorite. PowerShell is like the to me is like the COBOL of scripting languages. It's just very wordy to me. but it's not near as bad as COBOL for sure, but it's like, you know. But that's fun stuff. And I've been watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds on Paramount Plus.
Which has been disappointing.
You didn't like it? I'm liking it so far. Me so far. Yeah, I mean some of the, like the stuff with number one, I'm like, eh, okay, whatever. You know, you'll run that for one episode and it'll probably will never be mentioned again, is my guess. but so far I'm like it's a little bit of a return back to the way Star Trek used to be with regards to I don't think there's an overarching plot for the season.
There's only three episodes, yet. So you don't have that.
That's true. But
they say they're not going in that direction.
No, which is opposite of what they've done with Discovery and with Picard. So, Picard, I have my beefs about Picard, especially the Borghetti thing. But if you haven't watch it. If you know what I mean by Borghetti, you'll know what I mean by Borghetti. If you've watched it. But we'll. Next season, I believe the entire Next Gen class or Next Gen cast is coming to Picard, with exception of I don't think Will Wheaton will be in the next season necessarily. Could be, especially if they want to. But a lot of the characters they had in Picard for the first season aren't going to be in the third. So, like, Rios is gone. She played two different characters, but Issa Briones, I think that's how you say your name. She's not coming back. And somebody else wasn't either. I can't remember who. Oh, the guy that played Elnor. Elnor will be gone too, but. But they're only doing three seasons total of Picard, so next season is it for them. And next week,
Yeah, people complaining that Patrick Stewart was old. It's like he is.
Well,
he's like
he is
old.
Fucking old, man. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, did you say Patrick Stewart's not going to be in the third season of Picard?
No, he is.
I was going to say, why?
No.
What would they like? Well, it's called Picard. What would they?
Right. No, he is. No, there's the like almost. Everyone in the TNG cast is coming back, except for like Will Wheaton's character, which he's now a traveler. Kind of confirmed the suspicions in that one.
Did you watch the second season of Picard?
Yes.
Is it good? Would you say it's good? I mean, I did like.
I thought it was.
I did like the first season, but I didn't like the ending.
Right. Yeah, the ending I think you might like on this one, because Q is in it from basically the first episode to the last. He doesn't make an appearance every episode. And the only kind of problem I have with Picard was the middle got really long and drawn out and pointless. You know, but like 8, 9, and 10 were pretty decent episodes.
Did the Mandalorian show up?
Surprising
me
now.
Obi-Wan Kenobi, that looks good.
Yeah?
That looks fucking awesome. You see the trailer for it?
Is that this week? Is that this week or next week? I can't remember.
I think it's next week.
Okay. And the Orville New Horizons starts next week on Hulu.
Yeah, Stranger Things is this week. You know, 3 years later. The kids are fucking 25 years old now.
Yeah. You know what? I saw the Obi-Wan Kenobi trailer.
The Obi-Wan trailer,
And the thing is, like, I don't want to get my hopes up, right?
Right.
I don't want to get, and I know I'm going to watch
it. Well, if it's Jon Favreau, it's probably good. If it's the assholes from the movies, it probably sucks.
Right.
I know I'll probably, you know, I'll enjoy it. I just wish they would get away from all this crap.
What's her name? Admiral Cockblocker? Out of it, it'll be okay.
Admiral Holdo, when the Holdo maneuver.
The only purpose was to, you know, cockblock the hero from being a hero.
Who was played by Laura Dern. And did you see the story going around where she thought that their relationship in the movie was inappropriate because she was like 23 and he was in his 40s?
I just wish that they would get away from. Like, I was kind of happy that the last three movies weren't taking place in between Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope, right?
Right.
I'm glad for that, at least.
Right.
But, I mean, come on, let's move on. Let's move on to something new.
Yeah. But, I think without seeing my other show that I watched, the only network show that I've watched so far has been The Good Doctor, and it wrapped for the season. They are coming back next year.
That Time Traveler's Wife, that show looks pretty good. I watched the first two episodes. It's the chick from Game of Thrones, the redhead, the Scottish chick.
Well, did you see that? I think it's coming this fall. The True Lies movie, they're making it into a TV series, which doesn't have Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jamie Lee Curtis in it. Which I'm like, I don't know how it's going to work, but... And the rumor has it there's going to be a live-action Speed Racer coming. TV series, not movie.
I don't know, man. I'm kind of skeptical. Who cares about Speed Racer anymore? maybe it'll be good. I don't know.
Anime geeks.
But... Do they really?
They need a Godzilla live action.
Yeah, there you go. Well, the only one, see, the live action Godzilla one I remember was the one with Matthew Broderick, and that was pretty freaking awful.
And I would be interested to see a rubber suit version. With like old modern stuff, they might actually be able to pull it off.
You know what? I would love that. I love Godzilla movies.
And I know Luke, and this is probably why it failed. but Luke didn't really watch it. You would think he would have, but I watched this one series called How We Roll, and it was after the true story of pro bowler Tom Smallwood. All right, and it lasted a season, and that's it. It's canceled. Okay, not coming back. All right,
I'm not. No offense, but I'm not surprised. Right?
Right.
Well, I don't know how
they have bowling movies.
How?
Yeah. Well, Tom Cruise, Lebowski.
I'll bet it was probably good, wasn't it? It was pretty. It was probably really interesting.
With the show? No.
Yeah. Oh, was it?
No. Well, I think part of it is that it kind of looked at bowling like it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it is an old sport, but like they all bowl with black balls. It's like nobody bowls with a black ball anymore. You know, they have different colors and there's a lot of technology in the bowling balls now, you know, but of course, you know, you can't really put the, it's like when they did Ready Player One, the movie, which the movie's got its merits, okay, but it's definitely different than the book, okay? It's like, so you can't make a bowling TV show that talks about all the different little nuances in the sport of bowling, because that would cause the normal user, the normal viewer to turn, you know, basically turn their nose up at it, which they kind of did anyway. But
I was gonna say, what? No offense, but I mean, if you're not going to appeal to people who like bowling and get into it, I mean,
right?
Who like?
It's like
who are you appealing to?
Yeah, I know. It just makes me wonder too. And I have to go back and look through some of the episodes, but I want to say I thought, like, after episode 3 or 4, I saw Tom Smallwood's name drop from the credits.
What? Like was it a comedy or what was it?
It was a comedy. It was a sitcom.
Oh, okay. What was it on? Tubi?
No, it was on. What was it on? I know it shows up in
the Hallmark Channel.
Paramount. It's on Paramount Plus.
Oh, Paramount Plus.
But it was on a network. I can't remember which one,
really?
Off the top of my head. But yeah, it was on a network. It was. I think what I want to see CBS maybe, but yeah, it was mildly entertaining, but you know, it was. Yeah, I can just tell 3 or 4 episodes in that, yeah, this ain't gonna work. You know, it's like if you've ever watched, what was it, Auto Man from the 80s, only one season too, if I remember right.
Auto Man?
I thought it was. Or like, well, one I know for sure was, I think was a Salvage One. Do you remember that one?
Oh, Auto Man.
Merv Griffin,
oh,
right?
yeah, Auto Man, the guy that turns into a car.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. One season, 1983.
Yeah.
Toy Galaxy did a show about Auto Man. Oh,
it
boy,
happens.
That was
this. It happens.
Why? You know? You got to ask, why does it happen?
Right. or like.
What was the name of the bowling show?
How We Roll. Yeah, it's got Pete. What's his name?
Pete Holmes.
Yes.
Katie Lowes.
Yeah.
Julie White. Chi McBride.
She Mason was good. Lowe's. She played the guy who owned the bowling alley that Tom bowled at in the series, but it just didn't really work. It, you know. Actually, I think they've already shown. In fact, I think they sped up its demise in like the last week it ran. They showed 2 episodes instead of 1 just to get him out. But,
yeah, if the show's on a Friday, it's done.
Yeah. Well, this is on a Thursday, but.
So they didn't release all the episodes at once? They actually.
No. It was 1 a week for a while, and then they ended the last couple weeks they did 2 a week, back to back.
The shows I'm most interested in aren't going to come around until the fall. They got the Game of Thrones prequel, and then you got the Lord of the Rings series.
I heard about that. I thought they, have they made any progress on the second BSG remake? Yeah, because they were supposed to do another Battlestar Galactica, but it was going to be a remake again, a restart. But
I would still love if they did the Cylon War, you know, Blood and Chrome.
Yeah. I actually have that on Blu-ray somewhere. The, what was there, 3 or 4 episodes of that? It was 12 episodes, I think it was, but I got the Blu-ray. But have you seen, oh, that's the one I was thinking of on Disney Plus, She-Hulk Attorney at Law. Have you seen the trailer for that yet?
Yes, and the CGI on She-Hulk looks terrible. Freaking
awful.
It looks horrible. I hope they fix that.
Yeah, it looked like early CGI.
Oh, it was so bad. Other than that, it looks interesting, but it looked so bad.
I think they got the right actress for it, too, to be honest. I liked her in the trailer anyway, but... I finally did watch, Black Widow over the weekend. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I like that.
I enjoyed it.
Yep.
And then, not gonna have her in a sequel, though, huh?
No.
Not in that.
She's a little bit dead. or Cap, you know, the Steve Rogers Cap. but then finally, Maverick's coming out this Friday, I think.
3 years later.
Yeah. Well, you see now, Val Kilmer actually is in it, and he actually speaks in it, and it's really interesting how they got him to do it. I saw that documentary
about him. That's pretty. Yeah. Sad.
Yeah. Was it throat cancer he had?
He had throat cancer. Yeah, and he's got a voice box out.
Right, but what they did is they took like all the recordings of all his other movies and stuff, and applied like an AI to it, and that's how he gets to speak in Maverick, supposedly. So he plays a Navy commander. Yeah, because I guess other than that, he's still doing well. You know, he's got a little bit of the puffy look because. Depending on what kind of cancer you get, that can happen.
he in the documentary, he had his son speaking all his parts, and he sounds just like him.
Right. But so yeah, we'll see how that movie ends up. It could be really good. It could be really awful. I just wish that they would stop remaking shit.
Exactly. And doing comic books. That seems like that's what they're doing now. Nowadays.
Come up with something new.
Exactly. Write some original.
I will say that 90s show looks pretty interesting. If you watch the 70s show. It's, to me, that 90s show is what they should have done with that 80s show. Which was... not good. Because that 80s show had no tie-in whatsoever to that 70s show. It's like you spin off a series from a popular series and you don't talk about it. Anywho, but that, speaking of that, if you really, really want to watch that 80s show, it is... all of it's on YouTube.
Yeah. No, I think I'm going to pass on that one. I saw a couple episodes and wasn't endeared to it, so.
No, it wasn't good. It wasn't good. Because, see, they messed up. They could have had Eric and Donna in college and, you know, and stuff like that. And you can show Ashton Kutcher's character, Kelso, walking the streets, you know, on his beat, you know, but... you know, But nah, they kind of went the wrong way on that.
Did you see What We Do in the Shadows?
No.
Yeah, it's a funny show.
Love that show.
It's funny. That's so not Staten Island. I'm originally from Staten Island. That's not Staten Island. That's Toronto.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's like RoboCop, the movie. Most of it was actually filmed in Dallas, Texas. Not in Detroit.
Did they do most of these shows are all filmed in Canada now. Vancouver, Toronto.
Right.
Did they do if you ever watch Psych, that's supposed to take place in California via Vancouver.
Right.
Like, yeah.
Or, well,
track running down the side of the...
I don't think they ever shared where Eureka happened, except that it was a top secret town.
In Vancouver. Which
That was a great show, though. Yeah, it was filmed in Vancouver, yeah.
It was supposed to be like Washington State.
Yeah, that's what it probably was.
Close enough.
Yeah. I liked that show, and I was sad when it went away. And Warehouse 13 was also very good back then.
That was
good,
too. The Librarians was fun.
Mm-hmm. That's the one prop I want to figure out how to actually kind of work is the Tesla communicators they had. Actually, I'm sorry, Farnsworth. I'm screwing up the Tesla. The Tesla was the gun, and the Farnsworth was their communicator thing. But rumor has it, too, that they're supposed to bring back another J.J. Abrams versus Star Trek. I guess they got the whole cast signed.
Another movie?
Yeah.
Or a TV show?
Movie.
Or straight to Paramount.
With Chris Pine.
Or straight to Peacock. Oh, well. Yeah. Speaking of Chris Pine, he's supposed to be in, like, there's supposed to be a Dungeons & Dragons movie coming out with him.
New one?
Yeah. And is there a trailer already? Yeah. 2023 is supposed to show up.
Yeah, it says, despite script uncertainty, the entire cast wants to come back for Star Trek 4, which will be the second Star Trek 4.
As long as they don't have whales squared.
Yes. As long as they don't put freaking whales in it, I'm good. Not that there was anything wrong with the original Star Trek 4, but
that was a fun one.
It was fun. Oh, actually, yeah. Did you watch any of Picard season 2?
I saw all of it.
You saw all of it? Okay, so you remember in Star Trek 4, the punk rock guy on the bus that Spock gave the Vulcan never pinch? He's in it. He's in Picard. It's just hilarious.
I didn't recognize him.
Yep. He was on the bus, too. And they asked him, can you shut that off? He's like, okay.
I'm with the radio. That's right.
Yes. I think it was playing the same song, too. Which is a completely made-up song for the movie. Yeah, the only thing that really kind of was screwy with Star Trek Picard was the fact that Guinan was younger in 2024 than in 18-whatever in that TNG episode.
I'm not a continuity Nazi.
Yeah, well, I'm not either, you know, that's like some people are like, oh, they completely screwed up the Borg in Picard season 2. I'm like, you do know there could be more than one collective, right? It likely is, you know, but... And now the Borg are part of the Federation. That transwarp conduit's gonna come into play. anyway, that's not till what, December now, I think. Well, the sad part for the Orville New Horizon is basically it's the same show with a little different name, but I think it's going to be the only season that Seth does. We'll see. I guess if somebody decides to pick it up, and that's only
going
to
be like Buck
Rogers'
second season.
I hope not. The Searcher. Now, I see. There's
they basically
one...
turned it into Star Trek.
Well, kind of already was that, but I'd like to see what Seth would have done if they actually gave him a Star Trek property, but they didn't.
Well, what's interesting is now they curse on Star Trek.
Yeah. I mean, technically, that started with Data in Generations. Well, the word didn't come out, but you knew he said it. Yeah, I don't know. I do like I said, I'm so far pretty pleased with Strange New Worlds. I hope it picks up a little bit. I'm still not convinced that Laan or whatever her name is actually a relative of Khan. So
at
we'll
first
see.
I thought that chick was the one from what you want to call it, the Expanse, but it wasn't.
Right,
kind of looks like her though.
I thought she was on something though. Weren't she on? Maybe was she on Lost? Maybe. I don't know. I'm done
Wait.
With prequels.
Who was on Lost?
No, I was making the guess that
the Asian chick on Star Trek
Brave New Worlds, yeah. Laan Noonien Singh. And then you have the Khan project from Picard season 2. Oh boy, here comes the severe thunderstorms to the east west of us.
Let them stay up there. I've had enough storms this week. No, we're getting them tomorrow, and well, actually,
some pretty good ones down there too.
Yeah, huh. It went from like. It was like up in the 90s last week, and now it's back down in the 60s again. I'm like, come on, man. We need more heat to warm up this water so I can go swimming.
That's like, we did, remember last summer we did the Big Splash? So my wife did get memberships for her and Luke, but we figured because of my work schedule and all that it doesn't pay to get me one. Because they can always take me as a guest.
Well,
that opens Monday, I think. Saturday. I'm sorry. Okay, bye. That's Luke. But, oh, yeah, since the last show, the hamvention happened and ended. I went to, not for good, but I went to Saturday during the day, and they gave away their biggest grand prize ever. It had $20,000 worth of equipment in it. 4 radios,
nice.
1 cure. Yeah, it was, it's one of those things, though, I would have loved to have won it, but what I probably would have done is when I go to do it, I would have said, because the top end radio that was in it was an ICOM 7851. It's a $13,000 radio, and it would take up a quarter of my desk with just the radio. And I would be like, Can I have two lower cost HF rigs, or maybe three, or two lower cost HF rigs and a 2 meter 70 centimeter mobile? Because the rest of the stuff was good. Like the other stuff that was in it was they had an ICOM. I was all ICOM for most of the equipment, and they had all the accessories for each radio. They had the handheld ID52 Alpha, which is similar to my 51, but it has a color screen and more memory in it, so it does a database for both digital and analog. It had an ICOM 705, which is a QRP radio similar to what I already have, but in a better package, because they actually had a nice screen on it too. And then an ICOM 9700, which was an all-mode 2 meter 70 centimeter radio. And then it had, like you said, it had all the mics, an extra battery and all that. Of course, I didn't win it, so. But it's like, I also signed up for Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs. I think it's too late now. I think we got a couple more days. But he's doing this raffle through his Micro Works charity, which helps students get scholarships to trade schools. And he's doing a Mercedes Sprinter van, completely converted. It's like a $100,000 vehicle, and I thought that'd be kind of cool to win that. But then I thought, where the hell am I gonna put it?
You need a garage.
Yeah, a big one too, because the four-wheel drive one, and with a lift kit. So I looked in the contest. I'm like, oh, you can take cash. Okay, that's what I'll take. And I'll go pay off my Traverse and then swap it out for a Chevy Silverado so I can tow a camper. See, a camper I wouldn't mind because I can probably find a place to store it when I'm not using it. But something like that, I just wouldn't know where I'd put it. I'm due a win. I haven't had a win in a while.
Swing yourself a camper. That's where you can stay when you go to Southeast Linux Fest.
It wouldn't be given out until after that, but. No. But see, that's the other thing too. Is it's more designed for the van lifer kind of thing, so it has like a bed in the back and the kitchen, like with a little stove and a sink and stuff like that. Yeah, but they have the two seats in the front. The passenger seat will kind of swivel around to face the back. But that's it. There's only enough room for two people to sit in it when you're moving. So it's not like and not to mention the fact it really only has enough space for maybe two people to sleep in the back bed. So not really cool for the family. But, like I said, I'll take the cash and I'll get something cool. I wouldn't mind having one of those, though. I mean, at all. I mean, I would love it for stuff like that, for hamvention and stuff. Like, I could just go park in a Walmart parking lot. Most of them will let you do it.
There you go. That's camping in its prime at the Walmart parking lot. Spring for a KOA at least, right?
that's the other thing too. It's like I was looking for I'm probably going to end up buying a new tent soon. The one that I have has a ridge pole, not a ridge pole, but the pole that goes over the front door that's a part of the rainfly split. And I probably could get a replacement one, but I'm to the point where I've set that one up twice with the family beaten down and saying, when's it going to be set up? I'm like, stop talking to me. Let me work and get it set up. Especially since neither you two shorties can help me lift it up. So I'm going to probably replace it with one of those quick set tents, which basically you just kind of lock the poles in place and then you telescope them up and the tent's set up. And then you just got to stake it down and put the rainfly on it. But I started looking for a campsite. Mostly I wanted to go back to Kelly's Island. It is completely booked from now until the end of August.
Man.
It's like, okay, guess we're not going there. So I'm gonna try and see if I can find another campground the one nice thing about Kelly's was how they have the campground laid out. They have the campground literally connected to a beach. So you can just walk from the campground over to the beach and go swimming in Lake Erie. So I need to see if there's another beach connected to the camping area. Because that made it really convenient. The wife and son can go swimming while I go put my shoes on and go for a hike with my camera. Maybe swim. I usually don't like to swim in lakes because they're usually dirty.
Go to Three Mile Island Campground.
I don't like to glow in the dark. PA's got some good campgrounds too. I've been to many there too. So yeah. I do got to plan that trip sometime this summer because I miss camping. I haven't done it since 2020.
I haven't been camping in a long time, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, here's the funny thing, Dan. I was just looking on Amazon for tents. Somebody posted a question. Does it have a hole for an air conditioner? I'm like,
what?
Exactly. And then I'm flipping through the reviews too. It's like, air mattress, I get. An area rug for your tent, I don't get. I mean, maybe if you wanted to bring like a little mat to put your shoes on so the dirt doesn't go all over the tent, I get that. But laying an area rug around your air mattress, I'm just like, why? Why do you guys take so much crap with you camping? I mean, granted, when we go, I'm going to take the new tent. We're going to get Luke wants an air mattress. He was sleeping on a cot when we go camping. He said it's too uncomfortable, which I get. Those can be. Actually, what I probably should do is I probably should look for a thin air mattress that we can put on top of the cot. That way it can still be off the floor. And I'm thinking about getting like one of those little tables to put inside the tent so that we have some place to sit like our glasses and stuff like that so that they're not. I mean, they have those mesh bags and some of the tents have gear lofts to put stuff in, but I just don't like putting my glasses in those. Put it on a little table next to the air mattress and that makes sense. They can put things like our phones and stuff. The only kind of option that I absolutely need to have in a tent is I want a lot of tents now have the like a power port so you can plug into the shore power and then run the extension cord into the tent. kind of need that when we go camping for the CPAPs. Because you got to breathe when you... But... So what vacations are you planning this summer, Dan?
None.
Well, you already went to the boat thing?
Yeah, Smith Mountain Lake. That was pretty cool. It's kind of hard because my wife is going to be recovering from the surgery still, so I don't know. I would love to do some day trips. I don't think we're going to Brigantine this year. Nothing's been said or planned. So,
right.
I mean, I live in a vacation spot, you know?
True.
So I got the beaches. I got the beach. Yeah. I mean, there's day trips Virginia I would beach. Like to take. I would love to, like, go out to
well, you'd never Blue been to Ridge Mountains. Right, and you've never been to Williamsburg yet either, have you?
What do you mean? I've been to Williamsburg a bunch of times.
Okay.
I mean, I don't. I haven't been there in like a couple of years, but I was at Jamestown a couple months ago. Yeah. I've been to Williamsburg, and I've been to Yorktown.
Right.
I would like to go out to the Blue Ridge Mountains. Like, that would be nice.
They're beautiful.
Spend a day or two out there. The Natural Bridge would be cool to go to.
Yep.
I'd love to go back to the Outer Banks for a day. I mean, we usually do a day trip. But that works out best like in September when
not as many
all
people.
The vacation traffic's done.
Right.
Or on a Monday when nobody's
Virginia
there.
Beach was nice when I went there. I'd like Virginia Beach better than Atlantic City.
Oh yeah, Virginia Beach is nice. We go, we used to go quite frequently down. So, going to Virginia Beach proper is a bit of a pain in the butt because
the traffic sucks.
You know, the traffic. You have to pay to park and stuff. You go a little bit north or a little bit south of the beach. A little bit north, it's more residential. So you don't have to pay to park, but you do have to drive around until you find that parking spot. Then you have to walk a decent mile of the beach. And south of Virginia Beach, you get down there to the almost down towards
North Carolina
border,
yeah,
where it's a nature preserve there. You can drive on the beach if you have a four-wheel vehicle, but there's a nice beach down there, which I can't think of the damn name of, that we used to go to quite frequently. The problem is to get to that beach, you kind of like, you have to, there's no straight shot to it. It's like you have to go all the way around.
It's like me. It's like me getting down there. There's no straight shot to it.
Yeah. So
or like to go down to Southeast Linux Fest, all of the Ohio roads and a little bit of the West Virginia roads are not interstate. They're U.S. routes. So they're like, there's one little section in Ohio that drops down to 2-lane between me and Charlotte, but the rest of it's 4-lane. So it's not too bad, but
yeah.
But so the beach, I got to go to Turnpike 2.
The beach I'm thinking of is called Sandbridge, and it's nice. But again, you kind of like have to go. There's a military base that makes a straight shot impossible to do. No, not Norfolk. Oceana. There's a base called Oceana. There's a couple of them down there that you kind of have to go around. It's like an hour drive, 45 minutes to an hour, depending on traffic from here. But it's a nice beach. I went kayaking out there once. Yeah, fun beach. And then there's the beach that's like a mile away, not even a mile from my house, 3/4 of a mile from my back door. There's no waves.
Yep.
But it's still a fun beach. We go there like every day. We will be going there every day soon. Or at least I will be. Nice to go there after a run or a workout in the morning.
It's like, yeah. Fort Monroe Beach.
There's two, yeah.
Outlook Beach.
Well, Outlook
Beach. I'm actually looking at the map now.
Outlook Beach is the beach on the, there's one beach that's called, I don't know if they call the whole thing Outlook Beach. So Outlook Beach is, oh shit, I guess, no. I usually go, if you're looking at the map,
yeah.
Do you see where the Virginia Marine Resources Commission is? On the map?
I have to zoom out.
Now you got to zoom in.
Or that, yeah.
Yeah, so if you zoom in, right there where the Virginia Marine Resource Commission is, that's the beach I go to.
Okay.
On a regular basis. There's the Battery.
Oh, I see that.
So it's between the Virginia Marine Resource Commission and Battery de Russie.
Right.
That's where. Used to be. That the Virginia Marine Resource Commission wasn't there, and there's a parking lot, and I would park in there all the time. But then they said you can't park in there from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Monday through Friday. So then I have to park closer to Battery de Russie. But anyway, now if you go further north to Lookout Beach, which is different than Outlook Beach, right there at the Paradise Ocean Club is a mob scene. That's where all the touristy people, Old Point Comfort Lighthouse, like right over there, there's a beach and there's a parking lot. That's the only beach that has lifeguards right over there. There's lifeguards that are right there. Then if you want lifeguards again, you have to go to Paradise Ocean Club, but that's a membership club, so they do have a lifeguard in there, and then they also have a pool and a bar and everything. But we don't go there.
Dog beach. There's a dog beach up north of that.
The problem with dog beach.
Yeah, you're like, I just bring my dog to the beach.
Yeah, the problem with dog beach is
it looks pretty remote.
Well, if you look at Fenwick Road, which goes all the way through, you'll see Gullick Drive,
right,
which runs along the water, and then it crosses, like it turns 90 degrees. Right, almost right there where it crosses Fenwick Road, about another 30 or 40 yards down there, there's a gate across there. So pretty much that whole area of Dog Beach all the way up to when you start getting into Buck Row, that whole area is gated off and is now considered a wildlife refuge because they haven't cleaned up the munitions in that area. So they can't open that until Army Corps of Engineers comes in and cleans up the possible munitions that are in that area, because they don't want people getting blown up when they go to the beach.
Peril of living on an old army base.
Yes. So, but other than that, I mean, I kind of hope they don't open that area up, because it's nice to see that the wildlife has a place to go to.
Right. Yep.
There's a campground there, cool, too. So if you look up there, right up north of the Paradise Ocean Club is the Colonies RV and Travel Park. I wouldn't camp there because I live here, but it's still pretty cool. Anyway, I guess we got to start wrapping the show up. Joel's got work in the morning.
Wrap it up, man. I think.
You hope you have work in the morning, right? Oh, what was it? Monday morning.
Oh, I'm sure I do.
Monday morning, I didn't even... Like
it's just how much work.
I hadn't even started work yet, and my boss like texts me. He's like, "Hey, are you around? Can we jump on a call?" And I'm like, "Ah, I like just it crossed my mind. Like, what if they're doing layoffs? What if I'm getting laid off?" And it's like, he's like, "Hey, I'm having a problem trying to test, like sending messages through our you know, through this service that we're going to be using through iOS." And I was like, because I did the Android side, like I wrote up all the directions and everything that you had to do to test the application, because it's an alerts application, and we're using we're partnering with a company called Airship, which used to be called Urban Airship, but now they're just called Airship, and they handle like all the text messaging side of things. So sending out, so we don't have to do that part of sending the text message to the subscribers. We can get the subscribers, and then we could just send the message to them that we want to send. And then they handle sending it to all the different providers or how that needs to be done in that regards. But, the thing is, you set up some test channels, and then you have to have an application. And then in order to send, it's kind of weird. It's like in order to send a test message out over your application to a test group, you have to have like the channel ID on the device that the software is installed, and you have to have like a test application installed. And it was just like, just all these steps that you had to go through. And one of the things is like, it's not something you can easily write up to do on an iOS if you don't have an iPhone, right? So I couldn't do the iPhone part. I could do the Android, but not the iPhone. It is pretty similar, but anyway. You know how it goes.
Yeah, sounds
so
fun.
I worked with him on that, and I'm like, I feel your pain, man, but I don't. This was like, I wrote these directions up back in June or July, I think. And that's one of those things. Like, once you do it, you write up the you know, all that stuff up. Like, I don't remember how to do this. And the problem he was having is their web interface is horrendous. It is terrible. It took me half a day just to figure it. It's on the level of ServiceNow, Joel, of that like intuitiveness of using their application. And that's kind of what he needed help with. He couldn't tell whether how do I set up? Oh, give us a lowdown. I'm getting our promos ready.
We're going. Right. We're migrating to another version of ServiceNow.
Next week. I thought you were gonna say you're migrating away. Oh, dude, this is crazy. This is crazy. And then we do rush on.
No. Like,
back in April. Like, I'm terrible. I never look at my email. And I never look at my Teams, because we use Slack. Like, half the organization uses Teams,
right?
The other half uses Slack, and I'm always on Slack. So I noticed that I had a message sent to me in Teams back in April, and this was like last week. And the person was like, "Hey, I need to know whether these three knowledge articles are still are they any good, or should we delete them? Knowledge base articles." And like, I'm like, oh god, and I gotta go into ServiceNow and find these articles. So I go into ServiceNow, and I look at these articles, and like I put the article, the KB article, in the search, and it doesn't come up. And I tried like all three of the articles. I tried everything I could think of to find these articles, and they would not come up. And then I text the person back. It's like, I can't find these articles. I don't know. They won't show up for me. And then he had to like send me the direct link to each article, and then I could see them. I don't know why they wouldn't show up in the search for these damn articles by their name. Piece of crap. And then like I'm reading the article, and I'm like,
Gotta love it.
All it doesn't say who the original author was. It just says who updated the last time who updated it. And like I read these articles and I'm like, did I write this? I don't recognize any of this stuff. And then I found out how I could see the history of it. And yeah, sure enough, I did. Back in 2014, I wrote these articles. I'm like, I don't know. We don't use this technology. I don't know if they're any good. I haven't managed this stuff. I don't even remember writing these articles. So don't ask me whether they're any good. Ask people who still manage that stuff.
It's like every once in a while, I'll still get the random email from somebody in either a client when I was in professional services or even internally. And like, they'll ask me, how do you get to this resource? And I'm like, no, don't care.
How you gonna, is that resource still there?
I'm like, I have no idea. I don't do anything with it anymore. Yeah. Cause we used to use something called SecureLink, the client would install on a server on their network. All right. And then basically we visit the Ellucian SecureLink website and then we'd be able to get into the client's servers. Okay. You know, so like I'm into a year into being in the cloud and I'll get that message and I'm like, yeah, I'm not me. I used to set it up all the time for the clients, and I wouldn't even do the setup. I would walk them through, or send them the install shield and the document, and say, "Here you go. Let me know when you're at it, when you've added it, and I can see if I can see the servers." And I'm like, "Okay, you did your job. Thank you. Goodbye." You know, but I'm like. Yeah, I ain't got no clue, man. He's not my job.
the worst experience I ever had with that was a product called MetroMix, and it was a company that my company purchased, and then the original team all bailed, like they just all left
as usual,
and the last guy who was on his way out kind of walked us through this thing. It was like this hodgepodge of I think it was Ruby on Rails and MySQL and all this weird stuff, and like kind of had all these things that we could do to pull stuff out of it. And we were going to have to maintain it, and it was looking like it was going to be such a nightmare. Then, like, right before we started the project of having to upgrade it and stuff like that, they're like, "No, we're going to sunset it," right? So we had to archive it and then shut it all down. And we sent out notifications and everything. It's like, okay, this is being sunsetted. If you want your data, let us know. Nobody wanted their data. So we shut it down, archived it, deleted everything. A year later, somebody comes back and says, "Hey, we want our data." Oh my goodness. That was such a pain in the ass to have to do that.
Yeah. That's actually an interesting thing. Came across a link in Facebook where it says, "Hey, you can request your data, like all your." I haven't actually opened up the file I downloaded, the 4 gigabyte file I downloaded. But it took 2 days for Facebook to put together a package where I can download all of my data. But I guess I should probably open up the file.
Yeah.
Just to see what's in it. But I assume it probably has all my shit posting from God years ago and all the pictures of food. Remember when we used to go on Facebook to actually have fun?
Yeah.
Now we just get to go on there to debate crap.
I don't go on there, and I've been on Facebook in a long time now.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah. All right. We got to wrap this up.
Yep.
All right. Here we go. Ear promos. Have a great week.
I am short.
Oh my god.
It's Hacker
Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
Hello, my name is Matt, and I've started a new podcast called LibreQuest. I talk about Linux and general technical topics. To get the show, visit LibreQuest.org.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint you a fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up.
Just shut up.
Daddy, I have a gun!
It's over.
Well, you were making it pretty young in the kitchen. I was in the dining room having sushi.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, this one.
Excuse me. I bought this chicken dip over at Sam's Club.
Okay.
It's similar to like the buffalo chicken dip, but it's Thai chili. But it's got to be the weakest Thai chili I've ever tasted. It's almost bland, which is strange. But
threw that sucker out, right?
Yeah, I usually eat it with like I'm usually like, look, with the buffalo one, I usually get the Stacy's pita chips to dip it in, and I tried it this Thai chili one with the white cheddar cheese it thins. It actually helped. But I'm like, Thai chili, this ain't, because it ain't, I mean, I know Thai chili isn't really, really spicy, like anything that usually has that in it.
Uh-huh.
It's not, I mean, it can be, but usually isn't, you know, but this is just like, it tasted like chicken to me, with a little bit of, very little bit of spice. It's just, good thing there's chicken in it, but not what you're expecting.
Say goodnight, Joel. I gotta stop the recording.
Yeah, night, Joel.
They said by
hey,
July.
Remember to record
yeah,
too.
By July, something. Make sure that you set your static IP address to this, and your gateway to this, and the DNS servers are changing to this. And I said, okay. So between now and July something. And they sent that out like a month ago. I still didn't do it.
Ooh, nice.
But yeah, it's okay, you know, I just gotta go in and change this shit.
Yeah. It's like a payment provider sent out. This one payment provider is really good at pissing our company off. They sent this thing, oh, you guys got to change this certificate somewhere. And I'm like, what? So basically, they're changing their certificate on their website, but we had to go do something in our product in order for things not to break, which I'm like, that tells me that the company telling us to do this doesn't understand what how SSL should work.
Mm-mm-mm. Oh. All right. Gotta take that shit, right?
Yep. Manjaro.
So you're running it?
Yep.
How long have you been running it for?
Today.
Oh, today, huh?
I just did a new install. Well, I did run the KDE version a few weeks back, but I was running into issues getting Mumble to accept doing push to talk. So I downloaded the GNOME image and tried that, and it's so far much better. Plus, it also seems to work
Save it for the Mumble. Show.
Yeah.
Save it for the show.
Yeah. Where's Joe?
Joe be here when Joe is here, I guess. Don't worry about where Joe is.
Oh, well, that's cool.
There we go. All right, let's start the show. Oh, almost on time. Give me a count around.
Two, three.